Since the Four Corners investigation into obesity and the sugar industry, experts have been calling for a sugar tax to help solve one of the largest public health issues in Australia. But what does a sugar tax mean? Does it include all naturally occurring sugars? How will the tax work? Is there any evidence that the sugar tax will work to improve overall health of Australians? To tell us more about this issue, we have Dr. Anne-Marie Tho, Senior Lecturer in Health Policy from the University of Sydney. Hello, Anne-Marie.
Good afternoon, Mitch. How are you?
Very well. Thanks for joining us on 2SER. Now, public health experts have been advocating for a sugar tax to help obesity rates. Now, if this is the case, what foods would exactly be included in the tax?
That's a good question, Mick, and one that's often asked. Really, the main target is sugar-sweetened beverages. So where the focus is usually on soft drinks, which have significant added sugar and no other nutritional benefits. But different countries have really taken different approaches, and it very much depends, I think, on, in some ways, cultural factors as well as nutritional factors. One of the good references here is the World Health Organization's Global Sugar Guidelines, which actually really clearly document the adverse effect of free sugars on people's health and well-being. And they include really all sources of free sugars. So that would include fruit juices and sugar-sweetened beverages,
as well as
milk drinks that include added sugar.
Okay, so we're looking more at those sort of soft drinks and things like that that are, I guess, a bit of a sometimes thing, you know, a sometimes drink, not a thing that you'd want to drink every single day. But things like naturally occurring sugars and like honey and rice malt, dates and fructose, these things wouldn't take any sort of sugar tax?
It depends how the sugar tax is applied. So the focus has been on sugary beverages, as I mentioned, mainly because they provide very little benefit to the diet nutritionally, which is why milk beverages are sometimes excluded because they have calcium and other nutritional benefits.
Yeah.
But it's possible to also imagine a tax which would apply broadly to sweeteners, so sugars more broadly, but it hasn't really been an option that governments have pursued. And that's in part because once you begin to tax core foods that are recommended, say, for everyday consumption that might contain a small amount of sugar, it gets more complex to administer the tax and to differentiate between the healthier foods and the less healthy foods.
Yeah, fair enough. And we don't want to stop people from eating maybe the things that have the healthier sugars in them. So as a nutrition policy researcher, can you tell us about your work regarding the effectiveness of like a sugar tax?
Sure. My work has been focused on mainly understanding the politics and the decision-making around adopting sugar-sweetened beverage taxes. So I did a lot of my early work in the Pacific Islands, which were early adopters of soda taxes, as they are often called.
Yeah.
So I looked at Fiji, Nauru, French Polynesia and Samoa, who had taxes on sugary beverages 10 years ago.
Wow.
So this was really interesting to understand what had led these governments to take up these taxes. But I've also done quite a bit of work reviewing the evidence, so understanding the potential impact and the potential health benefits of adopting sugary sweetened beverage taxes, because I would say that price is a really strong influencer of consumption decisions.
Sure.
So as we think about what we eat, we often are making a trade-off around how much it costs us. So using price as one mechanism, and I would always emphasize that in themselves, a sugary beverage tax is not going to solve any sort of health problem. But in terms of making a really helpful contribution to a solution, and also in terms of really emphasizing the severe health consequences of overconsumption of these drinks, I think it's a really useful tool. And the evidence does show that it incentivizes people to reduce their consumption and can have meaningful impacts on subsequent health outcomes, because consumption of soft drinks is associated with diabetes and weight gain in particular, both of which have really serious consequences in the long term for health.
So it sounds like your studies have basically shown that a sugar tax could have some benefits, even for lower and middle income families who might decide to avoid eating or drinking the high sugary foods and look at having more of a healthy diet with cheaper expense.
Yes, I would agree. Really, there's some evidence that people on lower incomes might benefit health-wise much more than others because the price incentive is stronger. And I think there's also recognition that using the revenue to support lower income families and in perhaps health promotion, or perhaps as Philadelphia has done with providing early childhood education, is a way of compensating, I think, for the regressive nature of taxes on food. So when I say regressive, it just means that a tax on a food is a flat tax. So it affects you to the same extent whether you earn a really large income or a lower income. So putting the revenue from a soft drink tax into funds that benefit people on lower incomes can help to correct for any perception that it affects lower income people more.
So having said all this, it sounds like perhaps this could be fairly feasible for Australia. Do you think it's something we should be implementing?
I do actually think it would be a useful policy option for a government that wants to think comprehensively about how to address non-communicable diseases like diabetes. I think it's pretty clear that high consumption of sugar has adverse health effects.
Yeah.
And, yeah, thinking broadly and strategically about how to incentivize people to consume healthier foods and to consume less of the unhealthy foods is really important.
Hey, it can only be a good thing. Even if the price of Coke goes up another 50 cents, you know, I don't drink it much anyway. So it'll probably just deter me from drinking it even more. So that can't be a bad thing.
Well, and I do think that the aim is not to stop people from enjoying, as you called it, a sometimes food. I think there's the odd soft drink is not necessarily a problem. It's more about recognizing that these are not everyday foods, but the way that they're marketed and the price that they currently are, which is really quite cheap, actually, I think, counters that. So when we look at the current food environment, we can see that when people make decisions about what to eat, it's usually the unhealthy food that's cheapest and most convenient, readily available, heavily marketed. And what we're trying to do in researching nutrition policy is understand how policy can change those incentives, how we could think about it being the other way around, such that when we look at our food environments, you know, the different retail options that we have for food, the food in our houses, how could we make the healthy choices the easier choices?
I love it. I really hope this gets legs, because if I can get my fruit and veggies, you know, a little bit cheaper, then that's better for everyone, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Totally. Thank you so much for chatting to us today. Really interesting chat topic. And yeah, he's seeing what happens in Australia.
Great. Thanks so much for the time, Mick.